All right. Hello and welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Patrick Schmaltz, with my two brothers, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
Good evening.
Good evening indeed.
Indeed.
Good evening, Andrew.
Hello, good evening.
We're doing something a little different for episode 136. We're gonna do
Brothers Geek Watch.
If you're a longtime listener, you maybe we would call this a what do we used to call it? What was our segments called?
Rewatched.
Yeah.
Saw.
It was Saw, played, and read.
Saw, that's played,
what,
and read. Yeah,
that's what it used to be. But we're watching one. We've never done one of this before, but we've talked about this movie enough on the podcast that we thought this would be in theme at least.
And it's one of our favorites. It has special meaning across all of us.
Yes,
this particular movie we share. Yes. Quite a few things, quite a few memories associated with this movie. So,
and I am the only one of the three of us who have read all of the books.
Well, we'll talk about that. You're gonna have to give us
multiple times, by the way.
Okay. So
for those of you who don't fucking know, Christopher has like 9 books going at once.
This is true.
Yeah,
always has 9 books going.
Not quite 9, but I do have multiple books. Yes.
Okay. Tonight we're gonna watch the 2003 films. Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's incredible. We love
it's incredible. Yeah.
It's incredible.
The music's really good. The acting's really good. You're about to see some crazy shit. Hopefully.
As I think we talked about in our probably the first few episodes we ever recorded, everybody is a geek about something.
Mm-hmm.
And so this might not fit squarely within sci-fi or comics or other fantasy. It doesn't fit into any of that. But we are absolutely geeks about this movie because it is high quality filmmaking. It is a unique setting. It's historical. It is fascinating in its detail. It's wonderful in its execution.
Mm-hmm.
And so we nerd out about it a lot because I love this movie. And
We'll talk about it later, but we had a pilgrimage associated with this movie.
We did.
Yeah.
A few years ago. We'll talk about that as well.
Don't ruin the punchline, Andrew.
No. We'll get there. And I have to say, in honor of Ronald D. Moore, creator of Battlestar Galactica, tonight's drink of choice for the podcast is some Colorado moonshine.
Nice.
Ronald D. Moore, here's to you, sir.
Chris, Patrick, cheers. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a dirty vodka martini. I've made a batch of them, so I have a big... I have a big on ice batch of martinis next to me, so I might get a little sauce throughout this. So just
that's fine, as long as you can press
saucy,
stop recording.
I'm gonna maybe
I'll forget to press stop, and this will be the longest podcast ever. But it's at least
it'll go until the batteries die.
It's gonna at least be 2 hours and 18 minutes long. So
those of you who are gonna watch along with us, cue up your Blu-ray or your streaming device. Till you just see the beginning of the 20th Century Fox logo.
Okay, I'm going to describe what we see right now. The light is just touching the two. You see the two from very high above. And you see partial of the zero. And you see one of the spotlights just barely. Like, in the right-hand corner, there's a spotlight, one spotlight that's showing. That's what you should see. That's what you're going to get queued up. And you're going to press play on when I say go. So that's your timing. Everybody's going to press play when I say go, including listeners. So
Patrick,
we can't hear you.
This is not it. This is
no,
not
it came back.
When we're starting.
You
you're back.
3, 2, 1, go.
Did you have a spike? Yeah.
Did you hear me? Did I cut out? Oh, no. Is my internet poop? Oh, no. I might have had a spike. I see my shit going
in now. We'll
you'll
catch up.
Me, yeah, right. Just keep going. Don't Well, the movie will keep playing, and everybody's will keep playing. And this is just fun.
We're gonna watch a movie together.
Exactly.
Right.
It's as if we're in the same room. This is our commentary track.
Yep.
For posterity.
We got to do this. This is one of those movies that we just love. So I'm excited to watch it with you guys.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Who's ready?
Yeah. You guys still? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. You ready? When I say.
I hear the drums of the 20th Century Fox
two,
announcement.
One,
me too.
Yep,
awesome.
Yep. We're going. We're going.
We're off and rolling.
What a logo this is. It's iconic because we associate it with Star Wars, by the way. So,
it absolutely triggered every time I see it.
Every time it's a Star Wars.
It's iconic.
Yep.
All right. We got the Miramax titles.
Oh, yeah. Miramax.
Fucking Miramax.
Remember that was a thing?
Harvey Weinstein.
I do remember.
Fuck
you,
Harvey
Weinstein.
Yep, exactly.
Off. Die in jail.
Fuck that guy.
You piece of shit.
Yep.
Oh, and now here are the Universal titles.
Universal.
The Globe.
Wow, coming in hot. Okay, so Christopher, how
19
Christopher,
complete,
how many,
the 20th
many
book
books
was unfinished when
series?
Patrick O'Brien passed away.
And, oh, really?
Was he aged, or was he sick?
He was aged.
Okay.
I don't remember how old he was when he passed away.
What book does this follow?
Two books. It's a mashup of two.
Now, the villains in that book were American.
Mainly, this follows the Far Side of the World is the name of the book, but the movie makes changes from the book.
What was the other book that, do you remember the title of the other
Master
one?
And Commander is the opening book for the entire series.
And I attempted to read that book. I just, for some reason,
These books are hella dry.
Beautiful shot of the water. Yes, the books are very tense. That is the English flag, by the way.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, we're seeing ocean and ship and
I love the opening shot and the music and the sound design of this movie is spectacular.
It won an Oscar for sound editing, actually.
Can I tell you before this movie starts why I absolutely love this movie? It's a simple thing. This is not like people are upset that it's like that it's kind of boring in parts and slow, but what I love about this movie is it really just paints the picture of what it's like to live on a ship of this time.
The tight confines.
Yeah.
Yes.
I want to comment. Okay. We're watching.
Go for
some,
it. Yeah. Sorry.
We got some text over the shot right here, which it's a beautiful shot.
If you haven't
seen
this movie before, like we're going to ruin it. So, I mean,
we had the text on screen before of, this is the HMS Surprise, and it's got 28 guns, and it's 197 souls.
Yeah.
A little bit of trivia. Cannon and guns are the same thing.
Yes.
But when guns are on a ship, when cannon are on a ship, they're called guns. And when cannon are on land, they're called cannon. So
that's correct.
You see the term
that
guns.
That shot is of people. Everybody, every sailor gets 12 to 14 inches. That's how they design. That's the space in which they live. Is their hammocks define the width of the space in which they sleep, lie, have space, personal space for sailors on the lower decks. That hammock is 14 inches wide.
Crazy.
That is the space in which they live.
Has anybody ever slept in a hammock?
I love the little detail of the name of the
guns. They name the guns, yes.
Because every gun has its own crew that is always on that gun.
I had a replica of that exact hourglass. They sell it at a Maritime Museum shop in...
What's happening right now for the people who aren't sailors or who haven't read 19 sailing books?
This is the changing of the watch, right?
Yes, changing of the watch. Every 4 hours, they ring that bell and the watch changes.
So are dudes having to stay up in the freaking like sails for 4 hours? What are they doing up there?
Yes.
They're tending sail.
When they get orders to trim the sails, they do it.
Look at that beautiful...
Well,
so we got this foggy... Coast of Brazil shot. This is
so
incredible.
Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah.
Peter Weir is the director.
Would they do this shot via helicopter, Pat? This is Killick. He is so awesome in the books. He is such a pain in the ass, Jack.
I mean,
like, yeah. Oh yeah.
The this movie doesn't do him justice.
He's a great character.
Killick is an amazing character.
No, I love him. So I love this little child actor right here.
He's an officer, by the way,
from the show Rome. He played Octavian. Octavian, that's right. From Rome, the HBO series years ago, and I love him in this, and he's great.
Yep.
Oh, I love this. This opening scene is so amazing.
It builds the tension so nicely.
Yeah.
In terms of, I mean, all the elements that come into it, all the different officers with their certain roles.
Well, this is just like a really good script because you can tell like. It like sets the tone. Everybody's asleep. You here's the ship. Here's the things, and then he maybe sees the ship, right? And then later you see Jack.
Well, it's his watch. The point that you're missing is this is like four. This is like 5 or 6 in the morning.
Yeah,
right.
He's in charge right now. The captain is not on deck because he is the officer in charge.
Right. Yep. Right. What does that mean, Christopher? I don't understand.
They're assessing what the depth of the water is and what the
why would that matter to whether there's ship in the
It affects maneuverability. It affects
and they also there was a line where one of the crewmen said something about a reef marker.
He's checking
the depth.
Are
to
they
make
approaching
sure that they
a
won't,
reef?
They won't. Yeah, they won't go aground.
The sand and broken shell is suggestive of they are not over a reef.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I think it's really interesting. So we're kind of going all over the place, but like this young man right here is also an officer. So there's like there's a couple of boy officers.
Beating the quarters means everybody goes to their battle stations, essentially.
Yep.
Battle stations. So I'm sure we'll come back to that, but yeah, it's exciting.
That's the origin of battle stations is beating the quarters.
Yep.
You beat to quarters and everybody prepares to fight and everybody has a place to be and a job for purposes of preparing for a battle.
And here we see one of our heroes. That's Stephen Maturin.
Stephen Maturin.
A doctor.
Yep.
By the great Paul Bettany.
I love Paul Bettany. And this is the first time we're seeing
Captain Jack.
Look at how for battles, they take down all the interior walls of the ship on that deck and it opens it up so that they can freely move around, they can fight, they can work the guns, all of those things. They take down all those interior walls.
That's so cool.
Where away.
Yeah, there's a lot of ship speak in this movie.
Starboard is to the right. This is how I remember this. Starboard is to the right because larboard is to the left. L, larboard, to the left. Or port. Larboard or port. They mean the same thing. I always think larboard because it reminds me larboard is left.
Yep. So let's do some introductions here just so we make sure that everybody's kind of has a point of reference because we're meeting a lot of people. So we got Russell Crowe. He's Captain Jack Aubrey. He's the master and commander of the HMS Surprise. He is our hero.
There's an interesting thing you learn in the Master and Commander books about what that title is and why captain isn't really captain until you are a post captain. Anyway, I digress.
We're
going to
get into the weeds on that sometime.
Yeah.
Over the next two hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's 2 hours.
So we meet Jack. He is the man in command. If there is, I mean, is there anybody that you could ever imagine playing this role besides Russell Crowe?
No.
In
no.
terms of the most commanding presence
it's
you could
perfect.
Possibly have.
From the books, it's so perfect.
Isn't he a bit of a larger guy though in the books?
He's a heavier,
he's big, tall
larger
guy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean Russell Crowe is an imposing figure anyway.
I'm gonna tell you something though. It's like
right there, Jack hears something.
Yes,
here's a deck bell, right?
Yep.
Or like a call out,
sound across the water.
Well, okay, so the script I was telling you about, like that scene where the guy who's on watch, who's like pointing out, you see Jack like look at him like, oh, this part's awesome, but
this is such a great depiction of what it would really be like. A huge ball of iron flies across its.
Do we think that's to get even further into the weeds? We think this is grape shot, right? This is shot that's
no grape shot would have torn up the rigging.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah,
there was different kinds of
Maybe it could be Grapeshot is smaller balls, so it could have been Grapeshot. Yeah,
I think when you think of Grapeshot, think of shotgun pellets. Yeah, shot out of a cannon.
More, it's more akin to shotgun.
Yeah, but it's not like damaging the ship very much. It's just sort of like
it's intended to tear up the rigging.
Yeah,
to make it much more difficult to maneuver the ship.
Yeah, and to kill crew members, right?
And to kill crew members. Yeah,
one of my favorite lines: "We stand tall on the quarterback, son. All of us."
Yes,
yeah,
it's such
a great line. Chris, do you want to comment on Aubrey's hat?
No, I want to watch this.
Okay.
Hold fast.
Yep.
I love that.
These little sayings from the film have like made their way into
my life. I use
one hand for you, one hand for the ship. I think I say that. I say that whenever I'm like warning someone to take care of themselves.
Whenever we're hiking, one hand. Yeah.
That one yelling just now is, what would his rank be, Christopher? It's cap. It's his
lieutenant.
Lieutenant. Okay. Lieutenant Mr. Pullings. He is besides Aubrey and Maturin, I think Pullings is probably my favorite character.
He's really good in the movie. In it. Yeah.
He's a great character.
I love that shot of just the smoke.
Yep. Cause black powder guns produce a ton of smoke.
Look at him.
That's the first shot where you really see that. Holy shit! They are facing a ship that is ridiculously, they are overmatched.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Twice as big as they are.
Yep.
And they're losing.
The ship
badly
is torn up. Oh, and the splinters. That's what's visceral about the books is all the injuries. You're rarely hit by a cannonball. You're rarely hit by a grape shot. What you are hit by is the pieces of wood that are splinters that are the size of your arm that fly across when a cannonball hits the ship. It pulverizes wood and sends that wood flying everywhere, which are like daggers.
We see a guy in a red jacket right there. He's a Marine. Every man of war would have a detachment of straight fighting men, which would be the Royal Marines.
Correct.
Yep. Not, they don't tend any gun.
The rudder is shot. Yep. They are screwed.
Yep.
Totally screwed. Lots of injuries.
Even Maturin knows something's up. He is the least experienced person on this ship in terms of nautical anything.
I love this depiction of what the carpenter of the ship has to do is to stop leaks. And that's how they do it. It's so good. So good. They're going to get boarded.
Now, why would they board the ship, Christopher, as opposed to just sinking them?
Because there's money in it. If you take the ship as a lawful prize, everybody on the ship, starting at the captain all the way down, gets a share in the prize money. And when they sell the vessel, that's huge money for the captain. And that's huge money all the way down to the lowest level of the sailors.
And they can ransom the people as well to like their families and do stuff like that, correct?
Right.
That's
Yep.
So this scene for me is great for character for Jack Aubrey, because you really are getting a sense of Jack Aubrey's craftiness, his tactical thinking.
He's a seaman.
He is a seaman. He has seen all kinds of action, and he's never going to give up. He's never going to surrender. He figures out a way, given the situation, to save
their sails,
his crew.
Their sails
and
are shot away, and so they put the boats out so that they drag it into the fog.
And he's betting on the fact that this other ship won't follow him into the fog
and won't be able to find him.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a reference to the nickname that Jack has. He's been with this crew for a while. this is based upon Far Side of the World, which is the 10th book in the series, I think. Mm-hmm. And so this same crew has been with Jack. Multiple members of the crew have been with Jack on multiple voyages. And his nickname is Lucky Jack because he's taken a lot of prizes. He's made them a lot of money. He's kept them alive. So he's called Lucky Jack Aubrey.
They love him.
Yep.
Then you start to really see the ship is like effed up.
They lost. This is a clear, they just got away, but
yep.
Yeah, they were yeah. minutes away from losing.
And being I mean, the cinematography being... is freaking awesome. I just love yeah. the, God, everything, just the images are so good, so mm-hmm. strong.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to look up the cinematographer while we're talking.
So if you're tracking the amount of time that's passed, they've been rowing basically from sunup until sundown. Because now right. the sun is set,
whole,
it's dark.
This thing all started early morning before early Jack wash. Was on deck.
It was sunup, basically. Yep. And they've got the pumps to pump out the flooding.
This is Russell Boyd is the cinematographer. And I'm trying to look up for something that's like notable.
That's the lowest level of the ship.
Would that be the...
I mean, that's the carpenter.
Carpenter, okay. Mr. Lamb.
He's done some stuff. Crocodile Dundee 2, this guy, this same cinematographer. Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Butcher's Bill is a reference to the Killed and Wounded. Mr. Blakeney.
How many people got killed in this?
I missed it.
Nine dead, 27 wounded.
Thank you, Andrew. Out of 197.
We'll talk about it a little bit later, but the head injury to that other sailor is taken from another book. It's an iconic scene in the entire series, so it was not in this book, The Far Side of the World. It was in another book, actually book one, Master and Commander, but they moved it to this movie because it is such an iconic sort of scene to establish Maturin's character knowledge and the respect that the crew has for him that they added it to this movie because it's an iconic moment for Stephen Maturin as in his role on the ship.
Mm. Because you find out later that he's like a very educated man. Right. And you even talk, I think you were telling me that like in the books, he's like, he used to be a spy or
he
something.
He is a spy. He's a spy throughout the series.
That's awesome.
And the issue.
They don't really make reference to that in this though. They don't. He's just like a scientist, doctor guy.
And he's of Spanish and Irish descent in the books. And so the casting is a miscasting in my
opinion. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Paul Bettany's so good.
He is awesome. But it's miscast. He's miscast.
Oh, no.
That exchange right there, allows us to get into the thinking that Jack and Maturin are having that. So not only was the surprise hunting this privateer, now we get the idea that this privateer might actually have been hunting them as well.
Correct.
So they were waiting for them. So we're learning as we go that this French captain, this French privateer, it might be Jack's equal.
It's a quality scene.
Craftiness.
Yep.
And that's a lot going on, but as a narrative device, having Maturin be very, very knowledgeable and capable in every other area except the nautical.
Yep.
They have to explain everything to them, so it explains it to the audience as well.
It's perfect. Exposition, it's perfect. Yep.
But it's not exposition for exposition's sake.
Right. I was just gonna say that's like he's basically the audience for the
That's a crapper. That's a crapper.
Why is he looking at it?
Because that's where damage is. It got hit by.
Got shot away.
Yeah. You can look. You can see through the curtain. That's water.
Yep. I love this. Maturin has no affection for the ship. It's just a boat. But all the sailors look at him like he's crazy.
I love the characters in this because I would love the ship too.
Absolutely.
Maturin is not.
Yeah, it's just a vehicle.
Yep.
But they love her.
But it's their home. They're out there for like how long would years. They stay at sea? Yeah.
Years.
Years on your ship. Like yep. this is your home. So
getting a lot of information about the ship and their mission.
I mean, they start to give you a lot of like, there's a lot of like sailor jargon, you know, in that scene. And so
download the weather gauge, having the weather gauge. Yeah, that, yeah, there's yeah, a yeah. lot of
exposition and how about she's the ship of the line.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
And what kills you, the other thing that you learn...
We're out of our class.
That Steven understands and others understand, and what you learn from the books and the movie is it's not your injuries that necessarily kill you. It's the infection that emerges from the injuries that kills you.
Yeah.
That's why they remove the damaged arm.
They have no antibiotics.
No, yeah.
You know, you get injured, you're fucked. Yep. Especially a splinter that they can't get out of you. You know, it's like
and shatters your arm. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're totally screwed.
The sound design in this scene is incredible.
This scene always fucks me up.
You hear the saw go into his arm.
Yep. It's brutal.
Listen carefully.
Well, they're putting down gunpowder there because
sand. They're putting down sand
to soak up all the blood.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, this is pretty gross. This is pretty gross, but they're just showing you what it was like to live on this ship. It's like
straight up real.
But like, this is a little boy. This sucks. Mm. We're 15 minutes in and they're already cutting the kid's arm off.
Yep.
It's like brutal, but it's like, that's what it was like.
He tightens down that tourniquet.
Yep.
And then you listen to the knife cut into his flesh, and then the saw cutting through.
Because there's no freaking painkiller. It's like, this is it.
Yep.
They had opioids, but nothing to the point where they could like knock you out. They could just kind of dull your senses a little bit.
Oof. I mean, I've seen this movie 10 times.
I cringe like every time.
Every time. This yep. Yeah.
Every time. It's so visceral and awesome.
Yep. Yep.
How they depict
what a great performance by that kid.
Think about what that would mean. Ugh.
Yeah. Jeez. How would they repair that? They just like slap some wood in there or something?
No,
like that?
They would create a whole new, they would carve a whole new shoulder.
Yeah.
And then they would carve out notches for it to fit into and tie into so it would look like new.
Yeah.
And then they would paint it.
Yeah. Dude, I love that. I love that detail that they're repairing everything, including the freaking
masthead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or the, I don't know if that's the right term.
I mean, that's something. It's like a little detail. It's like he was on this ship when he was a boy, like yep. like this
when he was
has
a young
been,
when he was a young midshipman.
Yeah,
midshipmen are young officers,
and there can be midshipmen as young as the one we saw getting his arm cut off.
Correct. He's a midshipman.
Member,
this is the scene from the first book.
This
it's trepanning. It's called trepanning. Look it up.
Legit brain surgery happening here.
Yep. Well, yep. Hit cranium surgery.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean, this is less gory for me than the arm getting cut off.
This is why they had to put this in the movie, because it's a great scene from the first book.
I mean, really, why is he doing this outside? Why is everybody watching him?
He just because it's better light. Yeah, he needs the light. I was just about to say all the elements that go into. Of course, he would do surgery on somebody's head at high noon, you know, in an exposed deck, so that he can get the best light possible to cut into the guy's skull. What would that guy's rank be, Christopher? What would be his title?
Guy who just yelled at everybody?
He's not an officer.
Yeah.
He's like a bosun, bosun's mate.
He's in charge, like a kind of a crew chief or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly. Yeah. Like a sergeant, an enlisted officer.
Like a
non-enlisted officer.
Not like a chief. Yeah,
like a chief petty officer or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Not an enlisted man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or not an officer. This is a poignant thing.
This really is. This also establishes Aubrey as somebody who loves his men. They don't just love him. He loves his men. And he wants to take care of them. And the scene, even interacting with this boy who is, you know, 12 years old.
He's being groomed to be an officer.
Exactly.
Actually a captain of a ship if he's good enough.
Just to give some people some historical, this film is set in 1805, so the Brits are fighting Napoleon.
Admiral Nelson had one arm. That's why it's
That's why it's poignant. The toasted cheese.
Oh my god, so awesome. Toasted cheese.
Have you ever tried to make toasted cheese?
No, I have not. I have the cookbook. I have the cookbook of all the Aubrey tales of food. Yep.
Okay, so I looked up in the trivia actually.
Spotted dick, drowned baby.
Oh my god.
All that kind of food.
I looked up on the trivia that Russell Crowe learned to play the violin for this role. He says it's one of the hardest things he's ever had to do as an actor.
He does not really play. I mean, that's bullshit.
He's playing.
The trivia on IMDb indicated he plays on camera.
He's playing. Really? Whenever he's on camera, he
can't
playing.
Be well. It can't well, be he played
that,
well.
That I
they
wanted over, to point
they
out.
Overdubbed
I
this.
I haven't read the books, but I know
I'm sure it's overdubbed.
I read the beginning of the first novel, and from a storytelling point of view, Aubrey and Maturin couldn't be too different. They could not be more different as men.
That's true.
But they initially form their bond because they have a love of music.
Correct.
They needed a concert.
Yes. A concert. Yes.
Yeah. So their initial, and we're talking over right now, but there's this wonderful kind of cello and violin.
I listen
playing.
To this soundtrack all the time.
All the time.
It is wonderful. Did you see in that shot? It's a whole reconstructed shoulder.
Yep.
For her. Wonderful.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yep. Aubrey and Maturin.
They're underway again.
Their first bond, their very first bond as friends started with music.
Yep.
How long do you think that would take to do the repairs that they did? A couple weeks?
Weeks.
Maybe a week?
Yeah, weeks.
Yeah. So we just see like a couple weeks go by. Just a couple weeks, no big deal to repair the ship.
Well, you got 180 men working on it.
Yeah, no kidding.
This right here. So the book, the villain ship that they're chasing is American.
In the books, well, yes.
In the books, book, it's an American ship.
They change it to the French.
And
they put it during the Napoleonic Wars.
Yep.
But they keep the idea of the ship consistent in terms of the fact it is a technological marvel.
Made
in America, based on the actual design of the USS Constitution. And I've done a little bit of reading on it. The frigates that were built as the initial six frigates for the U.S. Navy were the most advanced wooden sailing ships in the world at the time.
Well, they talked about the Constitution. I looked up a couple of things about this boat. The Constitution was so thick that shots would bounce off of it. And they used to call it the old Ironside.
That's like, why it's got that nickname. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's just because it's tough as shit.
Yep. So they're like 44 guns. This has vastly more guns, vastly larger, and even faster than they are.
Faster, more guns, larger, and their shots bounce off of it, Andrew. Yep. Like it's craziness.
Yep.
Bless you. So yeah, they're taking on supplies, you know,
provisions. Taking on provisions.
Probably have to do
a little hint of Jack's wandering eye coming up.
Yeah, Jack was married through some of the books, right? But he was not a faithful husband.
He got married in the third book, I think.
But he was not a faithful husband, correct?
There's hints at it. No. Yeah, I don't think he was entirely faithful.
And we get a little exposition here while shit's going on. So they're trying to figure out where the ship was because they took provisions there too. And
two, 3 weeks ahead. Yep.
Yep.
I mean, he could just figure that out because he's been sailing for so long that it's like he knows how fast this stuff can go.
They can estimate speed. They can estimate all that stuff. All right, there's something special coming up that I'm going to talk about in depth, and I think...
Go for it.
Wait. So, let's...
Yeah.
These scenes are replicated throughout the books in terms of this is a development of the band of brothers on a ship.
Yep.
The officers have dinner together, and the captain hosts the officers, and then... It reverses and the officers host the captain. And it's not in the captain's quarters. It is in, it's amidships where the officers normally eat. And so sometimes they will invite the captain to go eat with them. But in this instance, it is the captain who has invited the officers to come in and eat with him.
Interesting.
What would this room be used for if it wasn't for
Jack's quarters? The captain's quarters. This is at the stern of the ship.
Yeah.
And he would be the only man that would have any kind of real privacy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, those windows are the back of the ship.
What was your comment, Andrew, that you were going to talk
about? Well, I mean, Aubrey's telling a great story about Horatio Nelson, and you're getting... Aubrey kind of has a questionable sense of humor. He's very funny to himself, and I think he gets laughs because his officers...
He's a captain. And they love him.
Maturin doesn't laugh at his jokes because he probably finds them a bit pedestrian.
But he's smart in other ways.
But you're getting this whole scene. Aubrey is a Navy man. He believes in this stuff.
That's right. He believes in duty.
He believes in king and country.
Yep.
He believes in heroes.
But the books also play up this really interesting idea that he's very motivated by money.
Yeah.
And he's very motivated by taking the prize. This book and the movie really plays up this sort of king and country idea.
Yeah.
And there's later scenes talk about we're being invaded. This is England, you know, all of that. But it's really a, it. He is a human being in the books because he's got to pay for his family. His he has expenses for the land and house that he buys. All of that. It's really interesting.
Well, the movie that how it humanizes Aubrey and just doesn't make him, you know, a stand up soldier is his relationship with Maturin.
It's really good.
It's really, I mean, that's what
it touches on. It touches on their relationship. The books are just incredible in terms of the development of their relationship.
Yep. Jack makes a pun. I fucking hate puns. And Maturin does too. And Maturin insults him.
That's funny.
You and Pun would pick a pocket. It's awesome. So the really these guys are drinking wine. They're doing toasts. They're feeling good.
They get hammered.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dinners like this, they get hammered. And here we have the Jonah.
The Jonah. So
more of the soundtrack. I run to the soundtrack, Patrick. I don't know if you run to.
Yeah.
I run to the soundtrack because it's so beautiful and so like change of pace, and I love it. Yeah. I love it.
No, this is one of the best. Like the some of the songs are very different than
I love this song.
The soundtrack, yeah. And we're about to hear one of my favorite songs from the soundtrack, actually. Not this one. This one starts to show.
I know what you're thinking about. Yeah, it's later in the movie.
It's later? Is it not this one?
Yeah. It's later in the movie.
Okay, never mind.
It is. I agree with you, Patrick. It's my favorite song from the whole soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to tell a story about it when it comes up, but
all right, good.
Yeah, I love this song as well.
There's the Jonah. Actually, they're not happy with the Jonah.
Just like that is what's great about this is in any group where there's common purpose, when they're working together, when there's going to be cliques, there's going to be outsiders and insiders and people who just don't fit in. And we're getting the sense right away that there's an officer
who
does not fit in. Yep. The Acheron found them again.
Remember, the weather gauge is the advantage of the wind.
Yep.
Good. Well, and that helps with like maneuverability and speed, but also your cannon shots. Your cannon shots are shooting they go further. So they got the long guns, so they can shoot further.
Do you guys have a problem with heights?
Oh yeah.
No.
I couldn't do this job. I would definitely shit my pants.
Trying to get up the rigging?
I could do it.
Oh, God, look at that. Yeah.
I could do it.
You could do it?
Yep.
I think there'd be an initial fear, but if once I did it once or twice, I could probably make myself do it. I don't have a huge problem with heights, but... Again, setting the stage by time of day. They found him at dawn. It's now brighter. It's later during the day. The pacing. Peter Weir... How he paces this movie. All the natural light. It's just incredible.
Well, because like a chase like this would take all
they're,
day.
They're running away as fast as they can, and the Acheron is chasing him as fast as they can.
That's an example of putting up every stitch of sail they have.
Because they're just trying
sextant training. Sextant training. This is class.
Because obviously the officers were
they need to learn. They're
responsible
tested on
for navigation.
Yep.
Jack's got a plan, doesn't he?
Is he his second in command?
Pullings, yes.
He's the first lieutenant?
Yep.
What's that older guy? What's his rank?
He's the master of the ship.
Okay.
So he's in charge of really the workings of the ship.
Okay. People crew and everybody.
Navigation.
Yeah.
How the ship works.
Yeah.
So they're almost on them with their guns.
That's why they were having that exchange earlier on about how they need to refit and what the ship needs and all of that. And the master really is in charge of making sure all of that, the rigging, all of that works.
Yeah. I mean, how does his ropes not get caught up in all that bullshit that's on that little wrap? That's the part of this movie that I'm like, wow.
They're experts. They're experts at what they do, dude.
Apparently, yeah.
You'd they have know to be, how to.
Like, the rope that's attached to the boy is going to get, like, caught up in all that hoo-ha.
Yep.
Once again, another example of Aubrey and his craftiness. Always having a plan.
Think of the stress that would be on that raft. Seriously. Shot at. It's like, dude.
Well, and then you become the target.
Well, and you're if you're hit by one of those, you're instantly dead. So I guess you feel no pain, right? I mean, it's just.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what you want in the in this experience is to just have an instant death. Not agonizing, dying from
pain.
Your
infection. Slow
death.
Yeah.
No painkillers. You just feel it. You die very slowly. It sucks.
And remember, I always try to remember because they have to light this for purposes of the movie so we can see it.
Yeah. But
pitch black on the sea, you can't see a goddamn thing.
Nope.
Except for the lanterns in the distance, right?
Well, right. But and they're
I mean, there's some
shining,
moonlight.
Yeah, they're shining a moonlight and stuff. But like, if you let your eyes adjust, you could see decently far. Maybe a couple. But
I think
like
this plan
like
works.
100 yards, maybe.
Obviously, I mean, Chris even said it. They're lighting it for benefits of the movie.
Yeah,
but. If there'd been a full moon or a brighter moon, maybe they couldn't have escaped. But I think
they're not going to see each other like this. It's going to be pitch fucking black.
I mean, they're hundreds, if not thousands, of yards apart.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, well, not thousands of yards. The cannon can't shoot thousands of yards. They can shoot hundreds of yards, though.
Yep.
Yeah. How far do we have that information? Like, how far can a cannon like that shoot?
No idea. Probably 400 or 500 yards. To be effective.
Right. Most of these ship battles take place, within like 100 yards, so football field length, right?
Yep. And then they go closer.
Yeah. They go in closer and then they.
For their broadsides, yeah.
Depends on the guns they have.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of this detail. What kind of crap food would they be eating, Christopher? Like what?
Dried beef, salted beef that's in casks, barrels of beef that's preserved. It's got to be just leathery and just shit.
Yeah,
just awful. And ship's biscuit. A lot of discussion of ship's biscuit, which is basically a mix of flour and water. It's like a more robust cracker.
Yeah, it's hardtack.
Yep.
Ugh.
Stuff that wouldn't spoil. That would provide calories for a hard day's work and wouldn't spoil.
Yep.
How much drinking could these sailors do?
They were allocated a portion of grog. Grog has rum in it and lime juice. That's what
lime
grog
juice,
is.
Lime juice to prevent
water
scurvy.
And lime juice, water, and rum.
Yeah,
that's what grog is.
That's grog. Yeah. I thought the noise the sound that word makes sounds more thick and disgusting.
Nope.
Than something.
It's, It's water, lime juice, and rum.
Huh. That's got to taste horrendous.
Yeah. And you're just getting lit.
Well, it's pretty diluted, so it's a reward to give them an extra ration of grog. You hear that later in the movie where they talk about giving them an extra ration of grog, and that's more alcohol for them.
Yeah. It was probably the one thing that, you know, one of the simple pleasures is being able to have an extra drink and maybe have a little bit of a buzz before you fall asleep.
Yep.
When you're off your watch.
A wonderful shot.
Yep. So, a little inside baseball factoid about, they shot a lot of this movie on a gigantic tank in Mexico. The same tank where they shot a lot of the Titanic. But they did do 10 days at sea on an actual working wooden ship where they shot on the ship.
That's the surprise that's in San Diego?
Yep. Yeah. The Rose is what she was initially called.
Right, right.
20th Century Fox bought her.
And then donated her to the Maritime Museum in San Diego, I think, right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
So now they got the wind in their favor. So
this gigantic.
And they're approaching the Cape Horn, right?
Yep.
This is around the very southern
part of
southern tip of South America. Yeah. Incredibly moving scene coming up.
Sailing all the sails up.
Do you know that's the origin of the measure of speed being knots? That's the origin of that. Did you know that, Patrick? They tie a length of rope.
Yeah.
And they I don't know all exact details, but they tie a length of rope with evenly spaced knots on the rope. And then at the one end of the rope, they have a piece of wood or something that will float. And they drop it. They drop it at the front of the ship, the stern, the bow of the ship. And then when that float reaches the back of the ship, the person at the back of the ship who sees it reach the back of the ship calls out, you know, stop the rope. And then they count the number of knots in between the back of the ship and the front of the ship on the piece of rope. And that determines how many knots you're traveling.
Wow. That's so interesting.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That's the part that we geek out on for this movie, is that there's all these little details. There's all these little cool things. It's visceral.
It's world building. It's that element of high fantasy that we love so much about Game of Thrones. Totally. That we love about Lord of the Rings.
Immersive detail in world building.
Yes.
In
world building.
All the little characters, all the little shipmates, all levels of the crew members and the crew, and it's just really interesting.
Everybody's fucking terrified.
Yes.
Everybody on the ship is fucking terrified. And Jack is pushing everybody past their limits, past what they think is reasonable, trying to catch.
He's an expert sailor, you know, and a very smart, educated man. So to him, like,
they trust him and they are obeying their captain, but they're all fucking terrified.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you be? Look at that goddamn storm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Look at those guys hanging on for dear life.
Jack just focused.
So visceral in terms of the interaction with the elements. I just love the how great they depict the challenge that this would represent in that era.
It must have been miserable to actually shoot the scene though.
Oh god.
Just
wet. No question, right?
Oh yep. God.
Have you ever been in a shoot that involved anything close to something like this?
water like this? No. Yeah. I mean, this is like every crew member's wet. I mean, I shot in Portland, Oregon for years where it's raining all the time. Yeah. But
yeah.
This is like every crew member soaked to the bone.
They're using water cannons on them. Yeah. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Wind machines, the whole.
Wind, yeah. Yeah. Fans.
All the actors. Yeah. Big fans. Like, that's craziness. Well, and everybody being in hair and makeup and then being blasted
here's
like
a
this.
Here's a Jonah moment. Pay attention. Mr. Hollum sent yep. aloft in order to help.
One of the plots you can kind of miss because we've been talking over it a little bit, but this ostracized outsider officer that nobody really likes.
He is sent aloft to give him a hand. And it's so, like, you know, he's 30 feet in the air by now.
Yeah.
And he freezes.
He's rightfully terrified, but...
Yeah, he freezes. He can't go any higher because it's so awful. He can't do anything about it. And he's trying to reef the sail. And the mast breaks. And is blown into the sea. And he's clinging to it. God, the music of this.
Yeah, this scene always fucks me up.
2 days ago, I was running, and this soundtrack is so evocative and so emotional that I just view this scene. This song came up, and I view this scene. It's so powerful how they do this as filmmakers.
Well, I mean, for the last 5 minutes, we haven't had any music. And then it's just been the storm and men yelling and
yep. And then it comes in.
And when you realize that they got to cut him loose, the music starts to come up and you're just like, oh shit.
The master, he looks at the master and the master's like, yeah, this ship's going to go. We got to save everybody.
Yep.
They're all crowded to one side. The master knew. You got to cut the ropes. It's terrible. There's the music.
He hands the axe to his friend.
His best friend, yeah.
Yeah.
This music is so good.
Yep. Yeah, this scene always fucks me up.
Yeah. They got to do it.
And all the people below deck cheer.
Yep. And he's still fucking alive.
Yep.
He falls in the water.
He makes it to the mast.
Yep. It was him or the ship. Yeah.
God, the music is just so awesome.
I mean, the guy who dies at sea, still alive like that, that is a horrible death.
Yeah, he's going to eventually be so exhausted that he can't swim anymore and he drowns.
Or he gets eaten by a shark.
Or something, but...
More likely drown.
The guy who couldn't, there's Mr. Hollum. He couldn't go up the rigging.
He froze, freezes. Climbing. Yep.
Yep.
I mean, this is a time when you wouldn't have a photo yet, so those are like probably the only
personal possessions you got. Yeah.
Right. Like you wouldn't have a photo of yourself or like who you were. Like that would be your only identification.
That's it.
Like, yep. Yeah.
Stephen offering perspective.
Yep.
Jack doesn't want to hear it.
Nope. Because Jack gave the order.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Jack loves his men.
Yep.
And he understands his men. Look at that. That's management. That is like,
yep.
Exactly. Management of a team, understanding his people.
Yep. Leadership. Yep.
Yep.
That's a reference to Steven's background. It's a wonderful backstory for Stephen Maturin. Mm-hmm. And it is really as detailed in the books about he was part of the Irish resistance against England. Mm. And that's a thread that is carried through the books about his role, secret role in the Irish resistance and England and the monarchy and the military in England was seeking out and executing and doing bad things to those who were part of the Irish resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And so Stephen, who was part of that and friends with people who were continue to be that, he sets that all aside. And he is working on the side of England against Napoleon again because Napoleon is a existential threat
mm-hmm.
to the UK, well, greater well, UK.
Well, I mean, Napoleon at this time is like conquering most of Europe, right?
Yep.
Like he's effing everybody up, and so there's this overarching thing to this movie that. Like they're on the losing end of this war,
and you gotta as a way to, I mean that whole scene establishes the only person who calls Jack on his bullshit is Maturin.
Yep,
mm-hmm. He's the only person on that ship that questions Jack directly to his face.
Yep,
and Jack respects that actually about Maturin. He respects. That Maturin can question him and he respects the fact that he will question him.
He would only question him though when the two of them were alone. That's the thing is like
yeah. never in front of the crew.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
There's such a hierarchy to this life that you would never violate, you know.
And Stephen respects that, but it also they have the kind of relationship where he tells it like it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
In private.
This is the scene with the singing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is
the song.
You're right. To the sun. I'm going to drink to the sun. I feel like I should start drinking every time they drink now.
I'm almost at the bottom of my glass.
Well, go reload. Keep it running, though.
But this is one of my favorite scenes.
Well, yeah. come back after the...
Going back to the... Oh, this is a great scene. That's pudding.
I mean, how do you make pudding on a boat like that?
Right?
Gelatin. It's easy.
Chocolate? Chocolate and gelatin?
Yep.
Did they get chocolate from the...
From the Brazil.
Yeah. From South America, yeah.
Yep.
Cocoa. They probably got cocoa.
Yep.
And sugar.
And they got sugar,
cocoa
too.
Cocoa
yeah.
and sugar. And...
Yep.
God,
and I'm sure they had gelatin.
Like, the simpleness of it is just, like, incredible. I love...
Pudding is easy to make if you got those ingredients. Steven, the naturalist, is like freaking out at this moment about the opportunity to go to the
Galapagos. And they're just getting lit. They're just
here we go.
Oh, I love this song.
I love this. Dude, did anyone else just get chills?
Oh, me too. Yep.
I was gonna say everyone's downloaded this song.
Totally got chills. I just love this song.
I have learned
camaraderie and friendship. Let's listen.
Is the crew singing with them too?
The crew picks it up, yeah.
I love that Killick like downs his wine.
So we've all downloaded that song.
Oh my god, yes.
On iTunes and I taught myself the lyrics.
Absolutely.
I sing along. I'm seeing this right now and I've thought about this for a while. Whichever one of us gets married next, obviously it'll be either Patrick or I. I'm gonna sing that at Patrick's wedding. I'm getting on stage. Oh, I'm gonna
love
get Chris.
It. I'll sing it with you, dude. Oh,
we're gonna print the lyrics out and we're gonna make Danny sing it. We're gonna teach it. It's gonna be our gift to you, Patrick.
So it's about camaraderie, it's about a lifelong friendship, it's about survival, it's about everything good about life at sea. Just life, basically.
So explain to the unlearned what the Galapagos means at this time, because it's like a new discovery. Like
it's before Darwin was there.
Darwin was like 50 or 60 years after this is set.
This is when people are starting to realize that the Galapagos is this interesting, like,
filled
isolation.
With interesting species. And as a naturalist, Steven is a naturalist.
There are tons of species that have diverged.
Right. And so Galapagos had been discovered, right? People knew where it was. But a deep study of the species on the Galapagos Island had never been done. And so with Steven, the opportunity for Steven and all the unique species that are hinted at but never really studied is an opportunity for him to be there as a naturalist to really catalog.
Naturalist at the time is like a
biologist.
Biologist, yeah. Yep. You're studying biology, but like a naturalist also is studying like plants also at the
scientist,
time.
Scientist, yes, botanist.
You're a botanist or biologist. You
correct.
Know, it's like,
a naturalist is a broader term for at this period of time.
Because Steven they didn't have the naturalist. Studies. Like this is the 1805, so it's like they don't have different studies of the different sciences.
When did Darwin write his
I mean, should we Google this?
It's like 1860 or 1870,
I feel like you're right.
I don't think it's that. When did he write his Origin of Species? 1859.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is way before that.
Yeah, it's 50 years before.
But this is probably like the beginning of them discovering, and it's like,
well, it's weird. Lots of weird shit on this island that is nowhere else in the world.
Yeah.
So it's a naturalist dream for people like Steven. It's like, holy shit, there's weird shit.
And no one's seen anything like it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, these sailors are around the world and they just want to eat the stuff. And Steven is like, oh, my God, holy shit, there's weird
stuff. And the two sailors are like, I don't see any women. I just see a bunch of birds and lizards and stuff. He's like, no women.
Man. Matron's just a kid in a candy store.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the book. The beauty of the books is that it explores deeply Maturin's entire character.
Yeah.
And his element of being a spy, a naturalist, a physician, not just a surgeon. There's a distinction in this time. Look at all of them. Jack is looking out to sea. And everybody else is looking at the islands.
Yeah. He sees some wreckage. And then he sees...
The point about the hat is that was a style choice. A captain could wear a hat amidships, which is sideways like that, or front to back.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And Jack chose to wear his hat amidships.
What was the distinction between him wearing the midships?
The style. I don't think there's any other distinction other than...
It's just a style choice.
You could wear the hat front to back. I think Pullings wears his hat front to back.
I mean, yeah, he does. I mean, if you guys are going to sing to me at my wedding, do we need to dress like this? Like, just no. Dress as...
No, we're not having a theme. You don't have to have a nautical themed wedding.
I've had a nautical themed wedding.
I'd be down with that, dude. I'd be there. I'd be all over that.
I want to wear that hat. I'm
fuck
like,
yeah, dude. I would.
That'd be awesome. That'd be fucking fun.
I'm all over it.
I don't know if Hannah would be so down with that.
I could convince her of anything.
The problem is, though, yeah. I mean...
And the sword.
Ashton cosplays as a pirate. If we were to get married, it wouldn't take me much to convince her to have a nautical wedding.
I think you should, dude.
Pirate wedding, dude.
I, as a father of a child who is planning a wedding right now, normal weddings are boring as hell, dude.
I agree.
I say go for you. Be unique.
You be you. Just don't try to be unique.
Be memorable, memorable. Don't do a boring ass wedding.
Yeah, do what you want. Yeah.
Do you regret your boring ass wedding, Christopher?
My boring ass wedding is unmemorable.
Yeah.
I don't regret it because I don't have good memories of it.
Good. Yeah.
As an event.
Yeah.
Just. Other than the, you know, the sabotage to the church.
But the details are unmemorable. The tuxedo you wore.
None of that is memorable.
The place you had the wedding.
Susan is beautiful in a wedding dress, but it was a wedding dress, right? Yeah. I mean, that's a wedding dress. She's beautiful.
Well, we're missing right now that, like, this is the distinction between, like...
Jack promised Stephen that he could go on the islands, and he's like, fuck you. We're going after the ship. And Stephen is pissed.
Yep. You made me a promise.
See, but like, who do you believe is right? I feel like the movie is trying to paint that Jack
is
like,
right.
Jack is of course right.
Yeah.
This is the king's ship.
Yep. Right. But
Steven signed on. What, again, context for the books is important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steven signed a contract. He is subject to naval law at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's signed a contract to be the physician on the ship, surgeon. And he is paid by the British Navy to serve as the physician on the ship. And as a result, he is subject to the authority of Jack. And Steven sometimes forgets that because he is a naturalist.
I will say this, though, is like the movie is trying to paint a picture of that Jack is a tyrant. Like he's kind of a little bit too harsh with Steven.
He's authoritarian.
Yeah, but they spend more time with Steven in the next couple of scenes to paint the picture of like he's very sad, this is disappointing, this is a shitty thing. And then he even redeems himself by like bringing him back to the Galapagos in a few scenes later. Spoiler alert, but you know,
well, and they're also they're building the tension of the fact that, yes, these men really care about and respect each other, but they have fundamentally different ideas of what's important. right. in life.
That's right.
Fundamentally different. And they're going to clash because and they're just fundamentally different.
The movie does a great
ends.
Job of, in 2.5 hours, encapsulating that. The books do a far better job. Sure. I encourage you all to read the books.
So, but, so the books never finished. Are there, like, do you feel resolved by the end of them? Like,
no, not really. I mean, it's historical fiction, so it's based upon sort of the timeline of the world at the time that all of this is happening. And so once they get past the Napoleonic War and they have peace with France, what's Jack to do? They're not fighting mm-hmm. a naval war anymore. Mm. And they fight a little bit with America, but that doesn't last that long. Mm-hmm. And so the books sort of lead to him essentially becoming a contracted naval admiral. Ultimately, at the end of the series, he becomes an admiral, the lowest level of admiral, a rear admiral. Again, naval term associated with the masts of a ship.
They're just drilling for some reason to prepare for their fight.
Preparing for a fight, yep.
Yeah, just getting ready.
Well, Jack even says it. They have to be able to fire more shot than the Acheron, so they're drilling to be more efficient with their loading and firing. And Matron has no role when there's no wounded. Matron doesn't have a role when they're you know, firing guns.
I misspoke earlier when I said there was 20 books. There's 20 complete books and one incomplete.
Did they release the incomplete?
Yes, I have that. I bought the full set.
Oh, wow.
So I have the complete set plus the incomplete.
You see them put the walls back up?
Does he get to be an old man, Christopher?
No.
How long is the time between book one and book 20 and
seven,
a half?
17 years.
So he gets his first command. He's like in his 20s or whatever, maybe, right?
Yep.
Maybe 30? Yeah. Maybe 30 for your first command?
Well, he wouldn't have he doesn't command a frigate. He commands a sloop. A 10-gun sloop.
14 yeah. guns.
14 guns. A small, yep. small
ship.
Half the size of the Surprise. A third of the size.
Oh, wow.
And then he has Blue at the Mizzen is the final full book. And Blue at the Mizzen, the Mizzen Mast, again, is a representative of if you have Blue at the Mizzen, you're admiral.
Mm.
I love this. Still, the term dull drums. There's no drums being beat, so it's doldrums.
Doldrums. Frickin' Jonah.
Sailors were superstitious.
Yep.
If there's any kind of criticism for this movie, I think it's this stretch where...
Again, taken from a different book.
Yeah, there's this stretch where it loses a little bit of focus, I think, even.
Yep, I agree.
It loses focus a little bit on Jack and Maturin. It loses a little bit of focus on the adventure of the Acheron. And it plays up the drama that exists on the ship.
I mean, it's a detail of life at sea that... Yeah. It really is evocative of that, but I think...
Sometimes it's going to be fucking boring.
It loses momentum, for sure.
Yeah, it loses momentum.
Well, that's the thing that I could say about the film is, like, it's not an action movie. It's a film about the life of the ship. Like, you living on the ship, and it's a drama with action scenes. That's
Christopher, would you have liked to have seen... An Aubrey Matron like television series.
Oh, fuck yes.
Like an HBO.
Oh my God.
That would be the most expensive HBO show of all time.
Oh my God. It would be. The books are incredible. Yeah. And visually, I mean, the books are dense. They're incredible, but very dense. I think as a series, like 3 episodes per book kind of thing. Oh my God. It'd be phenomenal. Phenomenal.
3 episodes per book? Not even like a full season is one.
Well, they're not hefty tomes. I mean, you get a full season out of a Game of Thrones book because the Game of Thrones book is 700 pages. The Aubrey Matchford novels are
some of the books could be 4 to 6 episodes, but some of the other books are tight in terms of
how many pages.
They are in a specific location dealing with a specific
couple hundred
issue.
Pages.
Yeah. Oh, that's pages. It? Oh, that's
300,
it.
Yeah.
When you say 20 pages, I thought, or 20 books, I thought, man, this is like a
some
serious...
of them are longer than others. Like Post Captain is really long.
So here we got, so this is key. We have the Jonah here. We have, you know, Midshipman Hollum, who is an outsider. The men do not respect him. The crewman who stood with Jack on the rail and hacked the lines loose and condemned his friend to his death did not make way for Mr. Hollum on deck.
An officer. Pay the officer appropriate respect.
Yeah, when an officer is passing, you make way for the officer as a sign of obedience. And he didn't do that.
Well, he even witnessed past him. He like nudged him. Yeah.
Yep. So Jack obviously realizes that this guy... It's a failure. It's as much as it's disrespect from the crewman. It's a failure of they don't respect you because you haven't earned their respect. Any other actor, these lines would have been just cheesy and hollow, but Russell Crowe just commits to it.
That's
he believes everything he's saying. Everything he's coming out of his mouth. Absolutely believes it.
He embodies Jack.
Yep.
I mean, Russell Crowe, he's a crazy person in real life, but most actors say that.
It's an unfortunate business, Hollum. That line is just... There's so many nuances to that line. Mm-hmm. It's an unfortunate business because you fucked this up. And also the crew is fucking it up. So.
Yep.
It's really it's a bummer for the captain.
Yep. Because he loves his men, but discipline is discipline. This exchange right here is the most important between these two. Maturin just finds the solution. It's obvious to him.
That's a reference to the Irish Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
That gives it so much more nuance to me that you told me that like he used to be work for the Irish Resistance. That's so interesting. Like this scene didn't do that for me earlier, but now you understand like rebellion and like fighting.
He was involved
authority.
In one. He was involved in one.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's all for like fighting the
tyranny.
Hierarchy. Yep. Tyranny. Yeah.
That's why he opposes Napoleon.
I mean, and man's fainting because he's seeing somebody get whipped.
Yep, it's rough.
I mean, this is like the worst. This is like the worst kind of like punishment. Being whipped has got to be awful.
Awful.
And the crew looking at
That's the reality of, I mean, the punishment was so severe that no one ever, I mean, it's the breaking discipline was so unbelievably rare because the threat of the punishment was so severe.
Yeah. Being
like
whipped.
You were just
being whipped
you,
is like, oh my God.
Well, and it's why it's outlawed in the Constitution. Cruel and unusual punishment, right?
Exactly.
It's freaking cruel. But it's the way they maintain.
This is a different
discipline.
Time, man.
Yeah.
This is a different time where it's like,
well, it's just different rules. Jack accepts the rules. Maturin doesn't. I mean, it's modernity versus
look at
a more.
They're all mocking him.
Yep.
And with the salute. It's just.
They're all up. Saluting him to just like.
It's a mockery. It's
all,
mockery.
Well, mockery.
It's not
mockery,
respect.
Mockery through fear, though. They're all just like a worry that.
They're not afraid of him. They're not afraid.
They hate him.
They're afraid of getting whipped.
No, they're not afraid. They're mocking him.
They blame him. This is all blame.
Yep. It's great. Great scene.
Okay, I'm going to be the first to bow out. I'm going to go reload. I'll be right back. Keep talking.
Yeah.
Midshipman's berth. This is where the midshipmen are, separate from the sailors.
Yeah. Hierarchies.
Yep.
Hierarchies everywhere. Hmm.
Not everything is in your books, Stephen.
Yep.
It's a great subtle moment of the difference between them.
Yep. Sailors are superstitious.
Yep. Killick is there listening.
Straight down to the hot place. I never caught that line before.
Yep.
All right, I'm back.
All right.
What I miss.
Straight down to the hot place, dude.
Yep. The superstition of the sailors, and Jack agrees with it. Sweaty, but they still have like 10 layers on. They still have their like heavy wool coat.
Mm-hmm.
They still have their vest. They still have their cotton shirt. They have their scarf tied up on their collar. Wearing a heavy felt hat.
You're a freaking officer on a freaking ship, man.
Oh, I know. You know, the long hair. You're just the smell. They just everybody just must have stunk.
Oh my god! Just
smelled like total shit the whole time.
Water in the bottom of the ship.
Dude, how can these guys? These guys don't take baths, do they? Like, how are they? Like,
there's some fresh water on the ship, but they don't bathe it.
They wipe down with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
They wipe down with seawater.
Yeah. This.
Not
cleanliness.
Fresh water is for drinking, dude.
Yeah. If there must have been such a focus, though, to do whatever they could to make sure that things were clean. But you just accept the fact that you're going to be rank. Everybody's going to be rank.
Yep.
I mean, thinking about. Yeah, I mean, you have the.
Goodbye, strong... Blakeney.
Yep. And Hallam.
Kills himself.
That splash. It's honestly one of my favorite shots in the whole movie.
It's messed up, dude.
Yeah.
The clear, dark water.
Yep. I've never noticed that transition before. Kind of it goes dark on his white face, and then it transitions to like the white the circle of the sun.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the thing, is there's so many details and little things in this
movie.
Look
at Killick. Killick is fucking with him. It's like Killick suggests the passage that he should read about Jonah.
Yep.
And Jack is like, you're an idiot. Shut up.
Yeah, seriously. we're not celebrating this.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was saying. That's what I'm saying, though, is like, right. every time you watch this, I see something new. Every time, there's so much detail and there's so much layers to this movie. That's why we've watched this 10 times, and this is why
exactly.
We love this effing movie.
The detail is awesome.
The detail is awesome, and there's so much, and there's nuance, and all the characters, all the side guys, and crew members, and little stories. Is Killick like the? He's just the cook, right?
Like, no, he's the captain, like Stewart. Yes,
right?
He's the steward to Jack.
Now, what is her? Like, obviously, cooking is his responsibility.
There is a ship's cook, but Killick makes the meals for Jack.
It's a function of his rank.
Yep.
Yeah, Killick takes care of Jack directly.
Yep.
Like he just helps him out. He's just the captain.
And
helper.
Of course, it reinforces the superstition of the sailors, because now that the Jonah is dead, the wind comes up.
Yep.
And they get fresh water. Yep.
Yep.
So it reinforces their superstition.
Yep.
Now they all get a bath.
Exactly.
I'm wondering, you know.
Look at that long hair.
Yeah. Still thinking about the ship, Akron, but I mean, that's just like a bad shot, right? I mean,
terrible.
This guy is just like.
And he's captain of the Marines.
He's Marines, yeah. Terrible.
Yeah, and he goddamn shoots the goddamn doctor. What's he doing?
Poor unfortunate Higgins. Gut shot. It's the fucking worst.
Yeah. This is a horrible way to die.
I gotta hit the head. I'll be back.
Oh, yeah. This is bad.
Jack is like, oh my God.
He's dead.
Terrible.
He's dead. Yeah. He's fucked.
Yep.
Oh,
bad deal. Yeah.
He's drinking and reading.
He's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's just like the assistant guy. Who's his fool?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the guy who mops up the blood. He's not the guy who performs the surgeries.
Correct.
Surgery.
Correct.
You know?
I love how they do the makeup on him is making him look so pasty and pale.
Oh yeah, he's dying, bro.
Yep, he's definitely dying.
The little things. This God, look at that. I love shots like this where the ship is just like destroying the water,
it's moving
through it.
The movement, the energy.
Yeah, the energy. Yep.
Heard him back.
Welcome back. You missed some pasty white makeup.
Pasty white, yep.
and some ship cutting through the ocean. That's
and they
all.
See the Acheron. It's like, okay, what are we going to do, Jack?
I absolutely. Matron
clearly fucking dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matron is dying.
Yeah. Yeah. He makes Jack a choice
has the, Jack has the choice.
Yeah, this is the thing is like he kind of like the movie
he goes against his
rules. Yep.
Yep.
For sure.
He makes a choice. He makes a choice to save his
friend.
He
should be chasing down that ship, but he's like, "No, I'm going to save my friend."
Yep.
Again, the music is so evocative.
So yes, evocative. Scenes.
This song is awesome too.
Yeah, it is.
And this is a call. They have a callback to this is the end credits song. So when they're playing, they're chasing the Acheron at the end. This same song is playing.
Well, here's his iguana.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't think it's the same song, Pat.
I think it is.
Oh, we'll have to listen.
Now, this scene stretches
again,
a little bit for me.
Straight from the books.
Is it straight from the books?
Yep.
Maturin does surgery on himself?
Yep.
Wow.
I think it's... See, this is the amazing thing about Patrick O'Brien is he based literally every like major scene, every set piece, every ship battle on actual historical records.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, embellished their relationship, and both of these characters are fictional, but like actual events, he was a historian of British naval history. And so he read all of these ship logs. He read all of these accounts. He read of all the battle records of all of these ships. And so he based all of this stuff. I haven't read in detail about whether or not this was based in the historical record, but I would not be surprised if there was an account of a ship's doctor doing exactly this.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. The pain involved would be high, but it's not in a really, like, really hypersensitive area.
Yeah.
This would be awful.
It'd be awful. I mean, come on, dude.
Matron's cool and calm doing surgery on himself, and Jack almost can't handle it.
No, they can't handle it. It's like, holy shit. The guy who's holding the mirror, his name is Padine.
Yeah. I love it. Matron is just calm and collected.
How much detail do they go in on? Little crewman, the random guy.
Tons.
That guy's background.
There's constant storylines about Padine.
Wow.
And, that's, you know, awesome. He goes from ship to ship.
That's interesting.
You know, you don't learn his entire life history, but.
Right.
It adds color, it adds flavor.
Right, sure, right. He's around for forever. And as you're reading these 21.
Yeah,
goals,
you see them grow and change. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just love it. Aubrey's barely holding it together,
and they're spreading the cut apart.
Ugh. Yep. Ew.
So that he can grab it.
Yeah, look at
the lead ball from the frickin' musket
with piece of shirt around it.
Yep.
Yep. That's the goddamn shirt.
I'm gonna pass out now. Sew me up. Part of the what they don't get into in the movie, but which is a key detail in the books, is Stephen is addicted to laudanum. Laudanum is the liquid form of opium.
Oh God!
And so Stephen self doses with laudanum for much of the series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's used in medicine, right? To dull the senses, to dull,
what,
you know,
it, what
it's,
liquor
it's
they
an opiate. It's an opiate. But Steven uses it regularly. He's addicted to it.
What liquor are they making out of cactus there? What is that? What is that going to be?
Probably Brahm of some kind.
Or tequila.
Yeah.
Tequila.
It's a type of whiskey, right?
Some kind of spirit.
All whiskeys are the same.
Yeah, it's just distilled from something.
There's
something
a mash, and then there's you evaporate, and then you distill the alcohol.
Oof.
Blakeney. Drawing the bugs.
The turtles.
And the...
The tortoises.
Tortoises, excuse me.
Yeah.
Fighting naturally.
This is the first movie to actually shoot on the Galapagos Islands.
Really?
Yep. I mean, they didn't.
So these are actually the Galapagos Islands. Like,
I don't know if this scene.
They got a permit.
I don't know if this scene is actually on the Galapagos, but they shot a lot of it in Mexico. This could be Baja, but they shot this. There are quite a few scenes where they shot actually in the Galapagos Islands.
On the Galapagos.
I love them just talking, and the ship is just in the background. I love that choice.
Yep.
You know.
They actually had, you know,
something prickly and hard to eradicate.
Yep.
this is a reference. I will name you after a tortoise. Testudo aubrei. That is a reference to another book where Stephen finds a tortoise in the South Sea, not on Galapagos, in the South Sea in Indonesia. And names a tortoise after.
Is there a tortoise name?
This music that's playing.
No, there isn't.
Testudo's Aubrey.
This music that's playing. It's Bach.
Patrick, you will appreciate this. I named as my hunter in WoW. Yeah. I had a tortoise, a pet, a companion, and I named it Testudo. And I named it Testudo Aubrey.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That's so great.
Cross-pollinating all my interests, dude.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, wasn't your character named like something after Dune? Like,
yes. It was Atreidian.
All right. So I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this right now. The next one of these we do, we're doing Frank Herbert's Dune before the new, or the David Lynch Dune before the new.
Oh, fuck that shit.
We are absolutely not.
All right.
We're not watching that garbage movie. That movie is fucking terrible.
We're going to watch and rip on it the whole time.
Oh, my God. Maybe we should. That would be kind of fun, actually. Yeah.
Just rip the shit out of that god awful movie.
Yes, we gotta watch it and just destroy it.
Oh my God! It's such a fucking
not a bad.
Terrible
movie. It'll be painful though. That'll be painful
before the new Dune comes out. We're doing that.
I want to expel the memory of that.
What an opportunity for a scientist to gather all these samples from the Galapagos.
Yeah. He's got plants. He's got cages. He's walking.
This has to be the Galapagos Islands. They must.
Yeah,
have
I think it
this.
Is. Yeah.
So there's no people that live on the Galapagos.
Yeah,
there are.
Are there?
Yeah, there are people that live there.
Are there indigenous people?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I'm sure there's some population, but
it's off the coast of Ecuador.
What a bizarre looking landscape, though. I
mean, volcanic islands, man.
Talk about like
there's this flightless cormorant.
Mm-hmm.
Like talk about like alien planet, you know?
Yeah.
Just like. No trees.
Very unique looking. Landscape.
Yeah, very unique. Yeah. That kind of looks like a green screen.
Yeah, it's a bit of a composite.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 2003.
Like yeah.
Do you guys know what movie was won best? This movie was nominated for Best Picture. Do you know what movie won Best Picture in 2003?
Oh, trivia. No. Yeah, bring the trivia. I have no idea. 2003. Oh, I love this music when yep. he sees the ship. Yep. What's the movie that won 2003? Tell me. Andrew?
I can't hear you guys.
Oh, we're back.
Are you there?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me? Uh-oh.
Yeah, I can hear you, Patrick.
Oh, we're here?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Is Andrew? Did we lose Andrew?
I think we might have lost Andrew. We're going to keep going.
Yeah. He saw the Acheron. He's got to go back to the ship.
I'm going to see if... Andrew's... Andrew left us hanging.
Technical difficulties.
I can't hear you.
Are you there?
Can you hear us? Oh, God.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, gosh. That Welcome was a long back. Time.
You see cages, right? You
what
see
happened?
Cages? Yeah, I see cages, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, good. We're
He's
still
on the back of Padine. Padine yeah. is carrying him.
Padine is carrying him. Yes. So, yeah, no, the movie that won Best Picture in 2003.
Yeah, tell us.
Return of the King.
Oh,
wow. Oh my gosh. I mean...
Worthy. That's worthy.
Okay. We could talk about this. I don't know if Return of the King is the best of the three, but I feel like... You give it to the series. Like,
oh yeah, I think that they absolutely won.
They had to give it to one of them because the series was incredible.
Yep. There are parts of Return of the King that are just fantastic filmmaking. Yeah. I would argue the best film of the three is Fellowship.
Fellowship is the best
one. I agree.
Fellowship is the best movie. Yeah.
All these samples.
Yep. Now, would Maturin have his own quarters, or would he have to share?
He probably has...
This like is the doctor's suite.
Okay. So
it's not his quarters.
Okay.
Yeah.
It might be his quarters.
I bet he has a space to work on patients, and that's what would be this. And
I don't think this is big enough for him to work on patients. I think it's his...
Part of me... Maybe he's trying to remember the part that I did read from Master and Commander. Part of his contract is that he would have some measure of privacy. I'm trying to think. But anyway,
like the first
very little. I think he would have his own berth, but it would be tiny.
Jack and his plan. Jack is always
transform the surprise into a phasmid.
Yep.
What's a phasmid? Tell me what that is.
That's living stick scene where it's an insect that
disguises
itself.
Has evolved to look like something else.
I missed them saying those words.
Yes. They were telling Jack about the phasmids on the island.
I thought you were doing some sailor terms there.
Nope. Phasmid is a naturalist term. And Jack gets inspiration from it.
So, you know, we're leading up to this, and I don't want to jump ahead, but I do want to say that when they get onto the other ship and they actually have some ship, like, on board combat, it's so chaotic. And mm-hmm. I love how that absolutely would be. It'd be smoking.
Yeah, look at how crowded that deck is.
Yeah.
And then think about a huge portion of that crew jumping onto the other ship.
Yes. And then fighting in, you know, close quarters.
I love all the little details of the scars. You see, I mean, Bonden has a scar. Jack has multiple scars. Pullings has a scar on his face and on his neck.
Yep.
This would be an incredibly rough and dangerous life. And people would get scarred up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the guy missing his leg right there. Like, absolutely. Christopher, the guys that they pick up in this movie who are on that other ship, do they talk about that in the book? Do they join the crew? Or are they like, or is that just like these random dudes?
They do not join the crew. They keep them as prisoner.
Uh-huh.
Especially if they're French crew. They do not join the crew.
No, and but no, no,
and
the guys
and they're paid for them. But the whalers.
No, the whalers. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. That the jet. There's a scene earlier that we kind of talked over where the whalers come aboard from the survivors from the destruction of the whaler.
Yeah.
And they come aboard and they are added to the ship's list, and they're added as able seamen, which is a category of member of the crew. And that determines what your pay is, you know, what your role is, all of that kind of thing. If you are a waster, you are below an able seaman. If you're an able seaman, you get a larger share of prize money, shit like that.
Oh, wow. Well, okay.
Able seamen are capable of reefing, pulling a rope, doing things around the ship that actually contribute to the functioning of the ship.
So their plan for anybody who doesn't know like what's going on is they're going to look like a whaler. They're going to look like they're having ship problems, sailing problems, and try to get the Acheron to come
in. The smoke is supposed to be indicative of burning the blubber to produce whale oil.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that's right.
Yeah, that sounds right. Oh,
what was that?
Andrew,
are you there?
Yeah, I had to reconnect.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You guys, yeah, I didn't hear you for like 15, 20 seconds. So,
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's all right.
Now they're preparing for the fight.
Yep.
Yeah, and they're tying things onto the right arm so because it's chaos, you know.
So they can tell, like, yeah, they can tell each other.
It's chaos. They can tell each other apart.
This is Jack's big, you know, heroic. Yep. I love it.
My least favorite part of the movie.
Your least favorite part?
Yeah, I hate these moments. These are artificial.
Wow.
It's, you know, it's the William Wallace scene.
Yeah. He needs to say this speech. It's very, very movie. You know, it's very cinematic.
It annoys me.
Russell Crowe makes it work though, man.
He does.
I mean, I like it. I hear what you're saying, Christopher. This would never happen. They're in the middle of preparing for battle, like, and they're going to take a few minutes to say a speech. Like, mm-hmm. But
I think they do. I think this kind of happens, but I mean, it's better than most, but I'm not a fan of them.
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's also, I mean, he's giving orders too. He's letting them, telling everybody the plan. So it's not just all, you know,
speechifying.
It's like a briefing.
No, I know.
Yeah. Battle briefing.
That's why it's better than most.
Exactly. It still has context.
Yeah, this is where he starts to speechify a little bit. Isn't that one of the books, Far Side of the World?
That's this book, yep.
Oh, that's this movie.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
With elements from other books.
Another fucking pun.
Surprise is on our side.
Yeah.
Lucky Jack.
It's the name of the ship, so it's like it's clever. Jack is so impressed with himself.
Yep, it's clever.
Oh, God, he thinks he's so clever.
It's good. It's good.
Killick, bringing coffee.
What did he say? There's
three
some
lumps in there.
What is lumps of what?
Sugar.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, coffee at sea must have been just atrocious.
Well, I mean, coffee in this time would have been a delicacy because it only grows in certain parts of the world.
Yeah.
They probably had it on the ship because they traded with people in South America, just like that's sugar and right. cocoa.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep.
It wouldn't be a normal... I mean, there would be probably some for the captain and other officers, but
it would definitely be a treat.
Yeah. Although it's I think rare. It's pretty regular in the books. I think coffee was something that Jack was yeah. having all the time.
Well, there. Well, being in South America, they would have a lot of it,
I
mean, right?
But tea, I think, is a, was a thing too. So,
well, I mean, that's just British, not South British America, culture.
Africa, yeah. Mm.
Poignant.
Yep.
Young kids ready to fight. Crazy.
Yep.
This is an important moment where they let fly the colors. So they raise the colors. That gives them legal right to attack.
Yep. They would if never the color, fire without...
If the
yeah.
colors are exposed, they have the legal right to attack.
We talked over it before, but this is... They took the real reels off these cannons so they could fire more elevation to take out the mask.
To target the mask. Yeah,
the strategy of it all.
Look at them all. Hit the mask.
Yep, Jack and how crafty he is.
Down the mast, the main mast,
and a ship that big, that's got to be a couple hundred feet tall, right?
Humongous.
Yep.
Mast.
I don't know why, but this moment coming right here, where Pullings calls out to them. Yep. That, for whatever reason, that is one of my favorite lines and moments of the entire film.
Huh.
I don't know why. I just love it.
I love how just smoky and ridiculous and chaotic it is.
Yeah.
Because it would be. It would just be...
Well, and I mean, look how close they are. And they're firing, what, 12-pound cannonballs? At each other, like they're 15 yards apart.
Yeah.
These are cannonballs that fly several hundred feet a second.
At most 30 yards. Yeah.
Yeah. Several hundred feet a second.
Poor master takes a ball to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just like killed immediately.
Yep.
Dead.
It's just pure luck if you survive.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about being in that kind of a fight. It's just completely luck. If you live.
Yeah. You have no control over whether you're going to live or die.
No
real control.
You fight the person in front of you, but everyone around you is trying to kill you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Mr. Blakeney comes through.
And I mean, this is a bigger ship. There's more men on this ship than the Surprise. So they're fighting a bigger force.
Be aggressive. Be aggressive.
Yep.
Killick. Killick is fighting too.
Yeah.
Everybody fights. Everybody fights.
Yep. Yep. Does a great job of, like we've said before, depicting the chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fuck that little French shit.
It's like a camper in Warzone. Fuck that
yep.
kid.
Oh my god, fucking campers.
Campers. Campers
in Warzone.
Killed by a camper. God damn it.
Yep, yep.
Seriously, look how close they are. They're going to shoot this huge cannon. Straight into the straight into the hull.
Yeah, Maturin goes, and Maturin in the books, there's a great, I mean, again, Maturin is a badass. He can fight like you can't believe.
Talk about running music, Christopher. Like you hear this and you just
the rhythm of it all. It's just so propellant. It's really, propulsive. That's the word.
I love that. That the guy hits the
it douses the fire.
His axe. I love that. Yeah.
I like, though, that you really get the sense that the Acheron is a much bigger ship from this particular scene. The gun deck is taller. It's wider.
Yep.
They're fighting in a much larger area than the Surprise,
to detail is really important.
Yep.
Oh, and they free the whalers.
Yep.
Now they got more men.
He did his job.
Yep.
Do your worst.
I love that. Man, I love that. He like asks the questions he needs to ask, and he's like, carry on.
Have they struck their colors? That means that they've resigned, they've surrendered.
Yeah.
And I mean,
no, I just love his glibness. It's just like he's right to the point, and then
Jack is no stranger to, I mean, he's a captain, man. He's fought. Yeah.
Just no
all
big
kinds
deal.
Of these
no
battles
big deal.
Before.
We just won this battle. A bunch of my men. Let's back. Carry on.
Yep. That's the moment of surrender.
Yep.
But again, Being sneaky.
Sneaky, sneaky. Crafty like Jack.
Yep.
Yep.
Not without cost.
Never without cost.
Yep, that's it.
And then we're back to this song that like played earlier when you lose crew members.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep, that song. That song when the
you start to see the crew members that have died from the fight. It's and like I mean I've seen this movie so many times and this still gets me, man. Like all these guys that we've gotten to know over the course of the film and like are really interesting characters in this young boy.
Yeah, he's maybe 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
He's given this important part of the plan because he's reliable. Yep. And he gets killed doing it.
Yep.
This music still gets me, man.
Music is awesome.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. That's what really does. It just makes you feel it.
Again, all the guys with all these scars.
Yeah, I mean,
all these battles, all these wounds getting stitched up.
I mean, living this life, Andrew, has got to be rough.
Rough is right.
Yeah. Just like you live a shitty life, and then you get into fights, and you maybe survive, and you come away with them you can't come away with them without being unscathed.
But this movie even does it. A common theme through all of this stuff is just the romance of being at sea.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie does it too.
You're free to, you have no one controls you, but you
choose the life of being a sailor because you love being at sea is like the romance of it is what they, you know,
the boat is your home. Nothing else matters, but your captain, like,
and your crewmates
and your crewmates.
And it's like a family, like losing.
Oh, you lose a member of the family for sure. And then they pray the frickin' Our Father. Jeez. Because, I mean, everybody in England at this time was a Christian, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Episcopal Church.
Yep.
Church of England.
Church of England.
Church of England, yeah. Jeez, that's crazy. I love all this.
Stephen was a Catholic. So.
Well, the Irish were Catholics.
Jack gives him a hard time for being a papist. That's the running joke in the books, is he's a papist.
Nobody trusted Catholics because they obeyed
the Pope. Nobody trusts a papist because their allegiance is to the Pope.
To the Pope, not to the king.
Not to
the king. What time does Henry the...
It was like 200-300 years before this.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like deep-seated in English history.
It's a point of pride.
Don't trust the Pope.
Don't trust the Pope. Yeah.
Well, that's what set England apart from so much more of Europe, because the French were Catholics, Spanish were Catholics, Italians were Catholics, and England,
Episcopal, Church of England.
They broke from the Catholic Church.
Crazy, interesting history.
All the history of it.
Yeah, I love it.
And it boils down to he lost his friend. He's sad because he lost his friend.
I mean,
this is the sort of the doctor's, the surgeon's suite.
Mm-hmm.
Is he sleeping in that?
Each ship had a surgeon's chest. Part of when Stephen, and this is in the books in terms of a detail, when Stephen signs his contract to be the ship's surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
He is allocated all of the sort of resources that a ship's surgeon receives. So he gets medicines, he gets ships, he gets books, shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
And that's
is it just because he's an educated man that the British Navy wants him to be part of?
Well,
Jack hires him directly.
Yeah, and Stephen needs the money because Stephen is his patron at the time. This is in the first book. His patron at the time that was going to pay his way dies. And so Stephen is stuck with no income on Mallorca, I think it is. And Jack is on Mallorca too. And Jack gets a command. And Jack says to Stephen, hey, I need a ship's doctor will you please come with? You seem to be a capable fellow. And Steven basically agrees because he needs the money. That's why. That's and, he likes Jack.
Well, yeah. Like in a time like this where it's sort of like you're not, I mean, these are rich men, but they're higher.
Well, Jack is not rich. Steven's not rich. That's the thing.
They're educated, like higher up status men, but they're not rich.
They're not rich.
Jack's dad was like a member of parliament, wasn't he?
Correct. Correct. Yeah. So Jack has no money. That's why he's fixated on money almost throughout the entire series.
But they're like working upper class. That's what these guys are.
You got to have some kind of lineage. You're not going to get to be a captain.
He's not a noble. And so if you're not a noble, you either have to be a merchant, a businessman, or you take lots of prizes and you get rich in the Navy.
Yes. Yeah.
But
they have higher status if they
and you own land. Eventually, Jack buys and owns land, and then that's wealth, right?
And the books talk about that. It's crazy.
Pullings gets promoted.
Does the books ever go Pulling, to like the Caribbean? Like, is he ever like pirates? You know, No,
the golden age of piracy was like 80 years before this.
Yeah,
Early 1700s is when the pirates were all over.
It's Mediterranean and Indonesia.
More toasted cheese,
which it will be ready when it's ready. He's a pain in the ass. Kill
I
it.
Love it.
Kill it there.
Kill it there.
Kill it there.
I love it. Oh, here's the reveal.
One more deception.
I love the little tinge
in the eye.
That's
acting, too. Dude.
That's acting. Dude, that's a subtlety.
Just Russell Crowe, man. He crushes it.
No, he's great.
Mr. Mowat.
Mm-hmm. Now he's first lieutenant because Pullings got promoted. Subject to the requirements of the service. I use that saying all the time.
Absolutely. It's in my lexicon, dude.
There are so many lessons from this movie
that are just all these quotes that have just invaded our interactions with each other and other people.
For sure.
This movie is the lifeblood of the Brothers Geek.
It's one of the touchstones. That is
so many. You're exactly right.
It is absolutely a touchstone.
That's why we're watching this, and like, I hope you enjoyed watching it with us. Like,
we've obviously been geeking out about it for 2 hours and 15 minutes.
I love this movie. I love it. Beat into quarters. They all go to their combat posts.
Yeah,
because they're expecting trouble.
And I love just the music.
The Frenchies on the Acheron are deceptive.
Yep. I love just the music's playing. They're all going about their business. These two, I mean, they're in love again.
That's why it's not the same song. Yeah.
For me, what really works about this movie beyond the adventure of it and just the fact that I geek out about all the naval shit, it's one of the best this and Shawshank, I think. Best representation of male friendship.
That's 100%. You're exactly right. That's why I love it so much. Is that friendship,
camaraderie? Yeah,
exactly.
Male
it's camaraderie. So good. It's so good.
There's no.
Well, and it reminds me of the books. I mean, the series really builds on that in so much greater detail. This movie does a good job of capturing a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. But my God, the books are incredible about the lifelong sort of friendship of those two. It's just an amazing story.
It's what works on levels like Star Trek works. It's Kirk and Spock. It's that kind of friendship that makes us love that so much.
You know?
Riker and Picard. Yeah.
No question. Yeah.
And then it's just the simple shot.
Great shot.
Them going off after the ship.
Peter Weir nominated for Best Director for this movie also.
I mean, he deserves it. Beautiful, beautiful movie. I totally loved it.
I love this movie.
I'm so glad we did this. Like,
I am so glad we did this too.
So good.
If anybody's still listening, we hope you enjoyed it. Also.
I mean, I hope you listened to this and watched the movie with us because
yes, we had a great time doing it.
Yeah,
and we're probably gonna do it again.
Absolutely, we it's are. So this is so fun.
So fun.
It's like watching the movie together, but not and exactly. re-record it. It's so good.
It's so good.
Technology allows us to do this.
Yep.
We must do it again.
We will do it again.
Must do it again. It's so fun. Anyway.
a few things at the end here. I'd just like to say, you know, follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek, and email us brothersgeekpodcast for your comments on the show and what you thought. And
if you have a movie you think that we should watch and
absolutely.
Yes, please suggest it.
Tweet us or DM us on Instagram, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brothers Geek do stuff on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah, Brothers Geek do stuff. Brothers Geek podcast, Facebook. Yeah, I'm gonna. Last thoughts, brothers.
Hold fast.
Hold fast.